Hello, fellow travelers and dreamers. Welcome to my podcast, On Journey with Danny G. I'm your host, Danny G, coming to you from the beautiful Hudson Valley, New York, at the base of Mount Beacon. In this podcast, you'll hear stories of some of my personal journeys around the world, as well as interviews with treasured guests and fellow travelers who can appreciate and tell their own tales about life on the road and journeying. I hope you like what you hear. Let us know by leaving comments, sharing, and liking our episodes wherever you stream your podcasts. Okay, wherever you are in the world, strap yourself in for some shoestring adventure. Now, let's let the stories take you on journey. I'm very excited about today's episode because I am interviewing someone who has their own story about travel and journeying. And this is my very first interview for this particular podcast. So without further ado, I would like to introduce today's guest. My guest today is Nancy Penner. Nancy was born and raised in rural Saskatchewan, and she's a mother to the awesome Tola, who I happen to know. And she is what she calls retired-ish from a career as an organizational development consultant. Nancy's lived in a few places like Western Canada, St. Petersburg, Russia, New York. Plus, she's had short stints in Prague and London and Adelaide, Australia. She set foot off her own continent, North America, for the first time at age 21 and traveled in over 50 countries since that time, often on multi-month trips. Perfect for On Journey. This is great. And she's just acquired Thor, which is a super awesome camper van for road tripping adventures north, south, east, and west in North America. And I would say, and we'll find this out, that all of what you just heard, this is really why, Nancy, and you can confirm this, you've been referred to in some circles as an international woman of mystery. Is that right?
That is right. Of course, it's only you that refers to me as that, but I'll take it.
That's true. It is only me. You might pick up that Nancy and I have been friends, and if you haven't, we have for quite a long time. And I'm just so happy and honored that she's agreed to be my first guest on this show. And maybe we'll get to some stories about how we met at some point. But before we do that, Nancy, I'd like to just ask you a question. As you know, this is an adventure travel podcast. I've struggled with what to call it or how to refer to it, but I think the kind of travel that you and I are familiar with can best be described as like adventure shoestring travel, something like that, maybe with some variation. So that's what's happening here. So when you think about that and this podcast, I'm just curious, what does it mean to you when you think of being on journey?
Thanks for inviting me to join you in this conversation, Dan. Such an interesting question. I spent a bit of time last night thinking about this. And you know what I arrived at? When I'm sort of my clearest and most grounded, I actually think about, you know, all of life as being on journey. It's really the orientation that I most resonate with in terms of what life is fundamentally about. So then that leaves me with the question about, you know, so what about the travel component of that, and why in this life of journey am I so attracted to that as a, you know, just a thing to do and to spend time and energy on. And I really arrived at the idea of travel as being like a tune-up, an opportunity to step away from the day-to-day and really connect with what I view as the essence of the journey, to refocus, to, you know, to to learn deeply, because there's not a moment, I think, on the road when I'm not learning something about the world, about myself.
So when you say tune up, it's like tuning our inner self.
Totally, tuning our inner self, exactly. Reflecting, you know, getting more deeply connected with what I'm about, what I value, re-inspiring, like all of those things are things that happen for me on the road when I am out of my day-to-day context.
Fantastic. That's awesome. I love that. I think I can completely relate to that, although I probably wouldn't have framed it that way. But in retrospect, particularly now when I'm going back to my journals, and it's such a like relationship with self type of process, right? And whether you get that on the front end, you know, planning a trip, or whether you're getting that on the back end, I think anyone who's been in that type of experience, multi-month trips, long trips, where you're sort of, you know, adventuring from day to day and having to kind of lean on the local culture or the people that you meet to get the things that you need, you know, you can't help but start to look inward. So the journey on journey is really a journey inward and outward. Yeah. When I hear you say that, at least that's where my mind goes to.
100%.
So I'm trying to think about where to go next. So I think the listeners would really find it fascinating, your story about your early beginnings. Now, I have had the pleasure of being in your hometown of Rabbit Lake. Is that okay if I say that?
Totally,
Rabbit Lake,
yeah.
In rural Saskatchewan. And, you know, about 7 hours north of like Alberta or something like that.
East.
I mean, of Calgary. Alberta is the province.
Yeah,
of Calgary. Oh, it's east.
East of Calgary. Calgary. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So much for my directions after all these years of traveling. So, and I was just blown away, fascinated, right? Particularly knowing you and for all these years, what, like 30 or plus years that we know each other. Can you tell people how this woman, who was once a young girl, growing up in this little, literally one horse town kind of thing, you know, growing up on Long Island and in New York, it was just like, you can imagine how mind blowing that is. So you went from there and you got to become, you know, international woman of mystery. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Like just anything that you want to share.
Sure. So it was a very small town. Like literally I grew up with, there were six kids in my grade, five girls and one boy. The town had maybe 125 people in it. And it was an hour's drive to, you know, a real city for big grocery shopping and, you know, activities and that sort of thing. So it was a very small town.
Can I just pepper in that I saw your school that you went to? And I was so struck by like this little tube that you had in the ground where kids can crawl through. Like we've all seen those. I've grown up with those too. But I was like, oh, what a cool little place. And you're like, oh yeah, that like Bob put that in. He had an extra spare like piece in his yard, yard or something. Like just that kind of like experience is so foreign to me. You know, you just said it like, oh yeah, you know. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, I had to just throw that in there.
So, you know, we traveled a bit when I was growing up, quite a bit actually, not overseas, but we camped and we did road trips through Canada and the States. So I got a little flavor of that.
So your mom and dad had a little kind of passion for travel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we would have, you know, time in the summer, and my mom was a teacher, time over Christmas, spring break, that sort of thing. So we would travel, and that was great. I wouldn't say that really lit me up in terms of travel, though. And I actually can't tell, like, I don't know what sort of called me in the travel space. But the thing that got me over the ocean actually was when I was finishing university, a friend of mine, Arnold Newfold, wanted to travel overseas, and we could get student work abroad visas coming out of college. I'm sure that's the case in the States as well. So we planned to do this. We got our visas. We, you know, kind of put a route together, and then he totally bailed on me. So there I was, you know, totally. I don't know. We like got a girlfriend or something like that. I'm not sure what happened. But anyway, so I put all of this work into organizing this, and I felt quite compelled to go. So I was like, okay, I'm doing this. I'd been working to, you know, get my first job out of college. I'd been doing interviews and that sort of thing. So,
something struck me though. There's a piece right there. So like, you're how old? 20?
Yeah.
And you were in this relationship with this guy or something?
No, he's a buddy. I went to high school with him. Like to boarding school. Yeah.
But he bails on you and you somehow don't let that faze you like one bit. And what is it in you? I think the listeners would be very inspired by this, particularly as being a single at that point, female, you know, mm-hmm. What got you to just say, no, I'm going to continue to go?
I'm not quite sure. I wanted to start to see the world.
It was a passion.
And I do get, definitely. And I do get a sense of adventure and exploration from my family. Like on both sides of my family, people are out there checking out the world. So it wasn't foreign to me in terms of what I'd seen others in my family do. So like, I was terrified for sure to do this on my own. I don't think I'd ever flown on my own at that point. I'd never been over the ocean. I didn't know what I was going to find. But the thing that helped, this is where I was going before you interjected, I'd been recruiting for jobs coming out of university, and the company that was going to hire me here in Calgary, it was an international organization, and the recruiter had some contacts in London. So he actually hooked me up with work for KPMG in London. So I knew that when I got there, I had a job.
Got it.
For a period of time. And, you know, I had to figure out the travel around that, and I had to find my place to stay and that sort of thing. But there was just a little bit of familiarity in that connection that I think was the thing that sort of gave me the courage to take the step. That's ultimately, good. Even though I was very nervous about it.
Oh, okay. So you had some nervousness. You had a loose structure, you know, a connection with a job, but you went anyway.
Yep. Yep.
And that took some courage, I think. Even with the job piece.
Felt like it did. And it was, you know, it was a great trip. I continued to feel some of that anxiety throughout. But, you know, it's part of the gig. It's part of being on journey.
Yeah, on journey.
It's
yes.
natural.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So this might be unfair, but when you first arrived and you landed in London, that was the first place?
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember?
What do I remember? I think that, you know, the first few days was really about finding a place to live. Like, I don't remember where I was staying, but I'm sure it was a hostel because I was definitely budget traveling. Going through the ads like on the wall in the hostel, and I don't know, I can't also remember what the sources were for finding places before we had the internet. It's like, how do you do that? There's probably some sort of
let's go England.
Exactly.
Before, prior to Lonely Planet.
Yeah, for sure. You know, finding a place to live, making contact with, you know, so that kind of the stuff of the next couple of months was all consuming. But I also remember just being like enthralled with London. It was the biggest city that I'd ever been in at that point in time. And, you know, the architecture and the energy was really exciting.
Awesome. Well, can you share a story, Nancy, of when you traveled, when you were on journey in some way that really let you turn a corner in your understanding of yourself? Because you brought up this idea of like, it's something's coming from self-reflection here in the joys of travel, and a change in your understanding of yourself and maybe even the world out there, you know, wherever you go with that. Let's see.
Mm-hmm. You know, I need to talk about my time in Russia. So I lived in St. Petersburg, Russia for a couple of years in the late 1990s. So, you know, kind of 5 years after things opened up in Russia, I went there with KPMG, which was my employer here in Calgary, and I was helping them set up an office in St. Petersburg. So it really, like, this is the most fundamental kind of experience of travel that I've had in terms of shifting my perspective on the world and on myself. So not quite like I was in day-to-day traveling in Russia all the time in the way that we're talking about in this podcast, but I wanted to talk about my arrival in St. Petersburg because it set a frame for me that I've held onto through, you know, all of my travels, all of my journeys. So I'm planning to move over there. I'm going to ship my stuff. I'm going to arrive. Somebody's going to pick me up in about, you know, 5 days before I'm ready to go. The office in St. Petersburg calls and says, look, we'd really like you to bring all of your stuff on the plane instead of shipping it. That's going to be way more cost effective. So, okay, I've got my like 7 big boxes of things.
Wow.
I'm going to get on the plane and everything's going to proceed from there.
Such a contrast to the usual just backpack that we've traveled
yeah,
with. Right?
Yeah, totally. And I've got like sheets and pillowcases and like toilet paper, like the comforts of life that maybe weren't available in Russia just, at that point.
Yeah. Just in case you couldn't find some toilet paper in Russia. Maybe at that time things were, I don't know how things were, but you know, I'd never been to Russia.
I remember the first time that like Diet Coke showed up on the shelves in the St. Petersburg supermarket and Jiffy peanut butter. Like it was still early days in terms of Western imports.
What year was it?
So it was 1996.
1996. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Because this leads up a little bit to when and how we met.
It does. Yeah, okay. It does. It does. So, you know, I went from my Europe travels and I'd done some work in Australia and Southeast Asia, but this was my first like big thing. So I get off the plane in St. Petersburg, I'm going through customs and immigration, and the woman's like looking at all of my stuff. They're going through my boxes and she's doing some, you know, some computations, and she looks up at me and she says, okay, it's going to cost you like $1,950 to bring this stuff into Russia. And I'm like, oh, I don't have $1,950.
Wow. So you're there, you're in a foreign country. It's the mid-1990s, post-Cold War Russia. And you got all this stuff and you're on a budget. And now you're dealing with this incredible situation on your own.
Exactly. Okay. And this woman's speaking broken English to me and I'm, you know, not speaking Russian to her because I don't know enough at that point to do that. And so I said, I don't have that money. And she looked at me and said, well, how much money do you have? Wow. And I said, I have like $183. And she looked at her sheet and she like redid her math. And she said, okay, give me $183. So she basically took all of my cash.
All of your money.
and sent me through.
I never heard this story.
And sent me through. So you know, I go through the gates and I found my driver and we get all my boxes on carts and we
nice negotiating, by the way, now that I think about it. Like, you know, this set the stage for other things for you. I think.
Very much so. So we together with, I think his name was Yevgeny and I collect all my things again and we go out to his car and he's got this tiny little Lada. And I've got all of these boxes of stuff. So we shove some in the back seat, and we shove some in the trunk, and we tie some to the roof.
Oh my God.
And it's like,
I would have paid money to see that scene right there, just standing on the corner.
Totally. And we like, and then we careen into the middle of town and he drops me off at a hotel. So like absolutely hilarious. But there are a few things that I was like processing to manage myself in the uncertainty of those, you know, couple of hours. And certainly one was just like faith in the universe. Everything's gonna be okay.
Something you told yourself?
Totally. Like, yeah, wow. Absolutely.
Wow.
Like, this is all going to work out. Another was,
I'm only beginning to say those things to myself. I mean, that's very, you were very young to be having that kind of wisdom. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, like I've just got to put trust out there. Like I can't control this.
Yeah.
I have to believe that it's going to be okay. I have to, like, this is part of the adventure. This adventurous kind of like orientation, again, the confidence, the belief that it's gonna be great. Those are three things that I really, and maybe just a general positive attitude about what I was up to, really things that held me, you know, throughout my time in Russia and in my journeys after that.
My mind's going somewhere. And of course, if this is not what I'm about to ask you, if this is not comfortable, obviously we can edit it out. But can I ask you something about your early upbringing and that your community you grew up in? Because you, if I can say it, you grew up in a Mennonite, right, community in rural Saskatchewan. Does that have anything to do with what we're talking about right now?
Yeah, maybe not so much. Well, like the faith component of it, I would say not so much, but certainly I am very clear, aware that, you know, I came from a very safe, confidence building kind of upbringing. So I approach the world with a belief truly that things will be okay. Like I just haven't had experiences that would have me be more on guard than I might otherwise be, which is such a gift. Like
that is
such a gift. And it'll show up again when we talk about traveling as a woman.
Yes. Well, so interesting. We've had such different early stages and we've wound up in very similar circles, you know? And so this is very good. And, okay, well, I could go down the route of the contrast with you and I, but I want to stay on you. So many of those listening, right, are going to be maybe already really, you know, yearning to take travel to another level. I'm sure some of what you've already shared is inspiring. It's certainly inspiring to me. And like to cross over from, you know, your typical American vacation, let's say, or North American vacation. I don't know how Canadians seem to be a little bit more adventurous to me than Americans. That's just my bias. But so adventure traveling or traveling in a way that goes outside of those bounds, right? Of just hotel, you know, spending lots of money. But there could be hesitations, right? We've already named a few, right? The fear, language differences, how you keep yourself safe, money. You know, one of the things I always hear from people is like, oh, wow, what do you do like to be able to travel so far? They automatically assume I'm in finance or I have like tons of money or something like that, which is so funny because I travel with such little money. And sometimes I've even saved money while I go away, which is very hard for people to believe, meaning I can spend less when I travel than when I stay home, oddly enough. So that's a lot. That's a lot of questions in there. But do you have any insights or tips you can share with our listeners that can get them inspired or more comfortable to take a plunge? And if you will, to add more complexity to it, as a woman who's often traveled by herself, if you can, you know, tap into that, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll hold the travel as a woman to the side for a minute and just talk about the money fear thing. So I think that there's obviously a huge spectrum in the way we can travel, from very bare bones to, you know, very fancy, controlled, contained. And I think that part of the work of being on journey is finding the sweet spot for each of us as individuals, the spot that balances, you know, kind of the confidence threshold or the risk threshold, the financial threshold, and the experience threshold. So I don't hold any judgment at all in terms of where people find themselves on that spectrum.
Yes.
For me personally, you know, I eased my way into this. I started in Europe. You know, I had a bit of a safety net around the work that I was able to establish for myself through my contacts in Calgary from my time in Europe, which, you know, overall you have to worry about like pickpockets and that sort of thing, but that's safe. From there, I ventured out to Southeast Asia. You know, I did a little bit it pushed my boundaries a little bit more. From there, I went to Russia. So, you know, you can step your way into this as well and build your confidence through experience. So, you know, that's probably one of my hints and tips around travel is ease into it. Learn your way into it.
Would it be safe to say start with where you're not comfortable, but maybe a little bit uncomfortable, like 10-15% outside your zone, something like that?
Yeah, and wherever maybe, that is a little bit more. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like the first time I traveled in India, I traveled with these overland companies. I don't even know if you have them anymore, but like in a vehicle with a group, you camp, you cook your own food and that sort of thing. So I traveled like India north to south on that. I wanted to get a broad perspective on the country, and I didn't have the energy to do that, you know, all on my own in a country that I was really not familiar with at all and that I perceived as being quite a cultural, you know, variance from what I was used to.
But that probably was an understatement when you arrived, right?
Yeah, exactly. The second time I went to India, though, maybe the third time, I went with a friend, but we did go on our own, organize things on our own, and I'll, you know, maybe tell you a little bit about one of the experiences that we had there. Another way of stepping into it.
Sure. Why don't you go into that experience? And in the experience, if you could tell me a highlight and a low light of travel through India.
So I'll start with the experience, and I think I want to share this because it's an example of kind of the wonder that can happen when you leave space in your travels for things to emerge. So my friend Wendy and I had about a month. I was already living in New York. I was, you know, back from Russia and from a period of travel, the time that we met.
Yes. Is that when we moved boxes into your Greenwich Village apartment?
Exactly. It was just after that, actually. So Wendy and I wanted to do some Himalayan hiking, trekking in northern India. So we had enough time that we didn't need to plan it fully. So we had a period of time that we were going to trek out of Manali, which is this mountain village about, I don't know, 6 or 8 hours north of Delhi. And then we had a period of time when we were going to meet a friend of mine who lived overseas, who was a guide. So we were going to do some stuff with him, just the three of us. And then we had some unscheduled time at the end. So we did our trekking. We met with my friend. We had like just amazing outdoor adventures. And then our intent had kind of been to go to Dharamsala to try to get a little bit of Buddhist vibe going on. But what we learned as we were trekking is that the Dalai Lama was actually teaching at a Kalachakra initiation ceremony just in the valley over from the one that we were hiking in. So we decided that what we would do is just catch a bus over the pass, and we would go and listen to some of his teachings. So our guide, you know, put us on a local bus. We did, I don't know, it was like probably a full day drive over the pass on these tiny, tiny little one lane roads that wind, you know, up these amazing high altitude Himalayan mountains. You know, there's no trees that high up. They're barren. They're extraordinarily beautiful.
And did your driver sometimes stop along the side of the road to pray? I remember that in the Himalayas.
I totally stopped to pray. And when we would meet oncoming traffic, he would make all of the passengers get off the bus.
Yes.
Because the road was so narrow that there was risk that, you know, he would fall over the edge and he wasn't gonna put us all in danger. So we'd get off the bus. He'd shimmy by the vehicle that was coming towards us, and we'd all get back on the bus.
Yep.
We'd go around these hairpin turns. He'd like
bring back memories.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. It was like a white knuckle ride for us, for, you know, just the nature of the road. But also extraordinarily beautiful. We get to the pass, there's the prayer flags, and, you know, absolutely amazing. And then we go back down. We get to Spiti, which is the name of the valley and the town that maybe the monastery that the ceremony was in. And we find this tent village of, you know, with 25,000 Tibetan Buddhists, mostly having come out of Nepal and living in northern India. You know, we pitched our tent at the end of one of these little streets, and we had the absolute privilege of joining this amazing community in Fantastic. Listening to the Dalai Lama's teachings. Wow. You know, there were some foreigners there, so they were translating into English and German and French and probably other languages as well. So we got our little radios. Incredible. And it was just like an amazing experience.
I can see how it even impacting you now as you speak about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was delightful. Like the kindness of the community, the wisdom of the teachings, the opportunity to experience some of the sort of lifestyle and orientation of these folks. It was incredible. And it happened because we left space
That's right.
and openness.
That's a big deal. Because that wasn't planned exactly.
Like
yeah.
It wasn't planned at all. We didn't know.
You were just in the north. You paid attention to an opportunity. You said yes. You didn't take unmeasured risks, but some risks with the drive and all of that.
Yeah.
Not a lot of choice there in India, at least not that time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that was a unique experience in India. You know, we were in a less populated area.
Yeah.
You know, so it was not a typical Indian experience, which, you know, I love India. I love the riches of the culture, but it is a very crowded, intense place.
Yes. I always say that. And I've heard this from others. I didn't come up with this myself, but it's like a complete immersion of all the senses.
Yeah.
An experience of stark contrasts.
Yes.
That are going on at the same time, right?
Very much. Yeah. So. Very much so. But like the colors, the smells, beautiful and really awful. Like
yes.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's like stepping out into like a different dimension in some ways.
Yeah.
I'm not even overstating it, right? It's like there's not a reference point in India that you can kind of like compare it
yeah.
to. It's a very, yeah. it's very unique place. Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, that's
totally.
Great. Thanks yeah. for sharing. So that must have been about, if my memory serves, because I remember when you came to New York and about 2003 or something or earlier?
Actually, it was a little bit earlier.
2000.
It was 2000. So I had it was the first year that I was in New York.
That's right.
And I think you were back then too.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great. Well, I'm wondering if we should speak a little bit, tell the listeners about how we met. Because that was kind of an interesting story, no?
Totally.
At least it's interesting to us. Let's see if it's as interesting as we think it is.
Oh, man. Yeah. So after I finished my time in Russia, I decided that I would take a year to explore before I found my next, you know, kind of work gig, which, you know, ultimately ended up being in New York. And I think the first place that I went was to Nepal.
It was 1998.
It was 1998, like fall of 1998. So I had a few things that I intended to do. I intended to do some trekking. I intended to do some whitewater rafting. But I also intended just to spend some downtime in Nepal, unstructured, to sort of recover from my time in Russia and get my travel head back on.
Downtime.
So. Downtime. Exactly.
I would say that you may be the queen of downtime.
I really am the queen of downtime.
I just like to say, I have to take this opportunity to say you've really had an impact on me about what it means to take downtime and to rest.
Yeah.
Now that might sound strange from a guy who's traveled a lot, but like I'm a little bit more like a machine that never stops, you know, like just keeps going and going, and like the Energizer Bunny, you know.
Totally.
But you, you know, and we'll get to this, you know, when I met you and we got to spend time together, I really was impressed by your ability to let yourself just do nothing and let yourself rest. I thought that was a very good addition that I learned. And I learned that from you.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you. I'm a very strong introvert, so I don't like, I need to.
And we might take this opportunity to say that I'm not.
We are quite the opposite in that regard.
Yeah, you and I are like yin yang in that regard, and others, which I think is what might have drawn us together. Yeah,
totally, for sure. I have, you know, probably most of my besties are extroverts because it does create the right balance.
Oh, you just said bestie with me. Connected to it. That really feels great. I love that. Well, you know that I feel the same way about you.
Yes, I do. So I was hanging out in Kathmandu, and you know, back to the balance between risk, money, experience, and how you find your place in the center of that. I chose what I thought was a pretty nice guest house. It wasn't a fancy hotel. It wasn't a hotel. It was definitely a guest house, but they had nice rooms. And one of the things that I loved about this guest house is that they had this common area at the front with a big stone fireplace and some comfy couches and that sort of thing. So in the mornings, which were cool at that point in time in Nepal and a little bit misty, I would come down from my room and there'd be a big fire going in the fireplace and I'd get them to make me my coffee and they played CNN, I think, was always on the TV for the morning news.
That's right.
So I would sit there with my journal and that would be my way of starting the day, my little temporary routine.
Now, just to give the listeners a little contrast that because this leads up to, because we met in that lobby, right?
Whereas I was
staying in probably like a 10-bed dorm or a room by myself with no air conditioning and like, you know, no mosquito net or just like a cheesy little mattress on the floor somewhere, because I'm just like on this crazy shoestring budget, and I, at this point, do not let comforts in so well. I just sort of like say to myself, nope, you're going to be very austere. You're going to sort of push the limits and save as much money as you can and, you know, and that kind of thing. But I was so happy to be able to just waltz into a hotel
totally.
Like that and just hang out in the lobby to watch catch up on news and, you know, just rest and sit on a nice couch.
Oh my goodness, I love that.
Yeah.
Which is definitely a travel hack, you know, to
it's
find your
yeah.
your really comfortable kind of luxurious place, you know. It's like going to the 5-star hotel in Delhi when you're staying in the shithole to, you know, just bask in the beauty and use a nice
bathroom. Nice bath, which I've done in Delhi too.
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always. Always.
So what was, this is a strange, I don't think I've ever asked you this. What was your first impression of me? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
So here's a cool, interesting, good looking traveler who's very funny, makes me laugh, like with everything that he says.
So we were laughing that early in the meeting.
I think we were laughing, and we were laughing with Phil, right? Phil was the third person in this story.
Talk about Phil.
Oh my God, Phil was rather randomly, I thought, waiting for his brother to arrive in Kathmandu, and because this was 1996. You didn't know, like maybe you'd get to an internet cafe and, you know, you'd be lucky enough to coordinate email, but
no texting,
but he thought,
no phones.
Exactly. Phil was planning on arriving in Kathmandu like in the last 2 weeks of October or something like that. And they had agreed that they would meet in this place. So Phil, day in, day out, was in this lobby area, sitting in front of the fireplace.
This is like, watching the play, Waiting for Godot. He was pacing. I remember him just pacing back and forth and just being like, my effing brother, you know, yeah. Like, and we just, I think this is the moment we made eye contact because we were looking at this and we're just kind of cracking up. And I'll take this opportunity to say, like, what struck me about you is that you had this very, which you still do, this quiet sort of contained disposition, but you had this little glint of like cheekiness or like humor in your eye, you know, because we made contact and we started to like giggle to one another, you know, just we were both taking in this rather odd scene, you know. I think that's how we started talking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you look very refined, put together. You look sort of like, you know, like a little bit of a badass too. Because I remember you had like a nose ring at that time, and you were sort of like, you know, you looked like kind of muscular. I was like, gotta get to know this person. Yeah.
Funny. So that was our meeting, like the three of us really just getting to know each other in these morning connects. And I think, Dan, for, you know, we had a bit of time in Kathmandu together, and we, you know, we went for some lunches. I remember buying you a dessert at the German bakery,
which I'll never forget because I had no money for dessert. And, you know, I was on a strict budget. I was spending maybe like, listeners probably find this hard to believe, I was probably spending like under $15 a day or something, you know, yeah. US dollars a day for room, board, everything. Cause I just, you know, I had what I had. I just finished graduate school. And so here's this woman, you know, she's just relaxed and she, you know, bought me dessert. And that was just such a heartfelt moment. I just was very appreciative. I'm still appreciative of that to this day. Yeah, it was great. And we went to Bhaktapur.
We went to Bhaktapur.
Right?
We did.
That was like a village near Kathmandu. Yeah. And the villagers had all their pottery out. Remember, they were baking it in the sun.
Oh,
and
I do remember. Yes.
Yeah. I think you sent me a photo of that. Yeah.
So the cool thing, though, that we discovered through that is that we were sort of both heading east in our travels. I was going to make my way to Australia to visit Wendy, who I already talked about. I traveled with her in India after that. And you were heading to Thailand to do some yoga and meditation. So we decided that we would reconnect and that we would try to spend some time together in Laos. So when I think about us getting to know each other and building our friendship, I think about it primarily in Laos, which was such a amazing kind of authentic journey because Laos at that point in time was just opening up to travelers. So the infrastructure of travel wasn't there in the way that it was in Thailand and that sort of thing. And it was just such a lovely experience.
I always get a little bit like flummoxed when I think and talk about Laos. Like I can't relate enough to people how it was back like then. And I can't compare it to now. You just knew though that something was going to happen. I can't compare it to now because I haven't been there since 1990, was it 1999 at that point or 98,
no,
whatever.
No, it was 1998. Yeah.
Still 98. And like how raw and unexplored it was and the level of like sort of adventure contained in that. Now, is it true that you and I rode on a fishing boat down the Mekong, was it the Mekong?
Yeah.
River.
Yeah, it was actually a transport barge. I remember like the piles of rebar that, you know, were the length of the ship. And there were bags of, I don't know, probably grain and that sort of thing. So it was a transport barge and there was maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 tourists that traveled from village to village.
There was a guy from Spain. Village. There was a girl from England, I remember. And we have some cool photos from that on that barge. Yeah. And we would stop in little towns on the way, right?
Yep, and we'd go find a little hotel or guest house to stay at, or maybe just a room in someone's house that had a little sign up.
Right, a little room in someone's house, yeah. I remember hammocks, I remember getting up really early and doing yoga. I remember floating down the river in inner tubes in Vang Vien, was it?
Yep,
yeah.
I think so.
How about the caves?
Oh my God. Oh, so much fun.
And our tour guide was sort of like this, like 11-year-old kid who just sort of knew the area and like took us in. And we were like, okay. And you know, Amazing.
I can't believe I ever went in caves. I'm so claustrophobic these days. I was like, I am.
Okay. Yeah, I remember you were right there with me.
Yeah, totally. We rented motorbikes. Yeah, we rode on local buses, on the roof.
On the roof of buses, right? Early in the morning.
On the roof of buses. Yeah, exactly. So that was it. It was like just such a planes, trains, and automobiles type.
We could talk more about Laos. It's so like rich. I remember stopping in a little village on the motorbikes and entertaining the children.
Yes, exactly. They were preparing for a party that evening, if I remember correctly, if we're talking about the same place. So I can't remember what they were celebrating, but they were getting, like, putting up decorations and getting chairs out, and they shared their Lao Lao, their home.
Lao Lao was the local liquor, and they put it in a little, it wasn't even a Ziploc bag. It was like a plastic baggie that we could take it with us and sip on it. Like, yeah.
And
it was just amazing. I remember the woman on the loom, she had like a wooden loom, and she was making these beautiful, what do they call it? Like tapestries, I guess, or like a little throw blanket. And I have a few of those actually somewhere in the house.
Yeah, I just pulled mine up the other day, actually.
Oh, really?
So they're in my bedroom, waiting for me to decide what to do.
Awesome. Maybe we'll do another episode where we get all of our little collections that we have from around the world, and we just talk about them in the story.
The trinkets.
That'd be kind of interesting. So I think maybe we'll start to end this talk with, if you don't mind, going into the piece about being a single woman traveler. And the reason why I'm so compelled for this, number one, obviously I'm a guy, and and I recognize from speaking more with women and having matured over time and hearing, you know, the different experiences that sometimes people have in general, you know, just the people of the world, but also men and women, you know, they share different kinds of experiences. And I know and I recognize that, like, I have put myself into some pretty sketchy situations. And I always say that I walked around with the attitude, and I still sort of do, and it's probably not so logical, that I just look around and I feel empowered with the idea that, like, I can just, you know, I could take everybody in this room.
Yeah, and totally.
I say that's illogical because that's just such a defense, right? Because you never know who you're going to run into at any given time and what danger you're putting yourself in. But I think that spurred me on to sort of just have the mental attitude to do that. And, you know, I'm a dude who has not had to necessarily worry about or think about, you know, my safety or, like, you know, what could potentially happen. And so it's a big privilege in some ways that I didn't know I had, really, until I started speaking to people. However, on the other hand, I have met people like you and other single women travelers who do it with their backpack, staying in the same places I've stayed in, riding on the same buses, you know, even getting rooms together with pretty near strangers and stuff like that because of the budgets and things. And so I'm so interested in sharing with the listeners, like, what's your perspective on that? How do you do it? And what, anything else you want to share?
Sure. So the first thing that I want to acknowledge is that, you know, I've always been safe. So I haven't had experiences as a woman that would put my risk tolerance in a different place. So, you know, I've just been really lucky in that regard in all, you know, all facets of my life. So with that comes a pretty ingrained belief that the world is a safe place. I can travel in a way that's safe for me. I don't need to worry about it. I need to be smart, but it's I don't feel an extraordinary amount of risk in the way that others might, based on their life experiences. But still, you know, I definitely have a set of strategies that I use as a traveler. And I think that they're not necessarily strategies just for women traveling. I think that they're just smart ways to travel. So I'm just going to list a few of those. You know, one of those is paying attention to when I'm arriving in a new place. So in an ideal world, I'm not arriving to someplace that I've never been before at night. so that I can navigate my way to the place that I'm going to stay in daylight. And when there's lots of people around. So that's one thing that I, you know, worry about a little bit less now because I'm not shoestring traveling as much as I used to. I have a son that I travel with, all of that sort of stuff.
You got a few bucks, Penske.
I've got a few bucks, exactly. I don't need to travel in the way that I used to. But
Penske, by the way, still, is what I've been calling you for probably decades now.
Yeah.
Nancy Penner, a.k.a. Penske, or International Woman of Mystery.
Woman of Mystery. Exactly. I would make a practice when I was traveling in the early days, or still when I'm traveling on more of a budget or in a less structured way, to book the first few nights of accommodation just so that I know where I'm going. And when I know where I'm going, I look like I know where I'm going. And I think that makes me look, it makes me less vulnerable. I have had situations where, you know, one time I was flying into Ethiopia and my ride didn't arrive. I actually flew in on their Christmas Day. So, you know, I was in the airport at midnight, not looking like I knew what I was doing. And I was getting a lot of attention, you know, so.
What did you do?
What did I do?
What kind of attention?
Just like a lot of help, more help than I needed.
Quote unquote, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think what I did was I found somebody to lend me their phone. I called the person who was supposed to be picking me up. He explained what happened. He gave me the name of a hotel close to the airport. I took the address down and I found my way there through like by taxi. And there's still a little bit of risk in the taxi situation, but I didn't have to rely on all of the people that were offering to help that, you know, yeah. I didn't have a way of vetting. So book my first night or two of accommodation so that I can get oriented. I always, when I arrive in a new place, I kind of like mark my territory. I figure out what's going on, you know, and create my safe zone, the spot where that area where I feel comfortable. So once I get the lay of the land in that sort of safe zone, I can venture out, but know what I'm coming back to. So that's just a way that I build my confidence in a place. So that's a strategy. Packing well is another strategy. So on budget traveling, I need to be able to carry all of my stuff on my being so that I have my hands free. Yes. So backpack, day pack, making sure that those things are slash proof is a thing that I think about. And then of course, always carrying my paperwork and my money on my body.
On your body, yeah.
Being conscious of surroundings, just like you are in any, you know, in any city, actually, these days, I would say, doing my research. So having a sense of where I'm going, where I'm at, those are the types of things that I sort of deploy as strategies. I tend to plan a few things, but not over plan. So just a couple things that I can hang my hat on, especially now. Yeah, put a little bit of structure. And especially now when I'm traveling with my 13-year-old, well, plan a little bit more so that he knows what's up as well and can count on a few things. And then we can
And what about relationships? Does that play in?
Say a little bit more.
Well, I think about you and I, and well, this gets to so much, and you know, maybe we're going to have you back on again just to unpack some of these things. But like, I think I thought about what you said about early childhood and like upbringing. And so you had said to the listeners that you came from a lot of safety and sort of comfort, and that instilled some kind of security in your travel. I, in contrast, didn't have a whole lot of that, you know, a lot of safety and stuff. So I come with this like intensity, and my parents didn't travel. I always joke, my mom's idea of travel was going either to the you know, to the Roosevelt Field flea market versus the Busy Bee flea market, you know, which is about 20 minutes away from each other. That's not exactly fair. She traveled a little bit, but I always joke about that, you know, they were more provincial, state on Long Island. You know, my dad was a Vietnam vet, so that was where he saw other places, but otherwise, you know, happy to be in the homeland, that kind of thing. But where am I going with that? So, but what they did give me, particularly my mom, is the ability to have relationships and like talk to people and like, and be brave in that way. And I find security in that, but I'm, as we've mentioned, a total extrovert, right? Like, so I talk to everybody and everything, probably too, you know, too much. And you're a little bit more insular, you know, sort of like it probably takes you a little while to maybe go there. You know, I don't know. That's just an assumption and how I know you, but.
Yeah, you're right.
So my point about that was that when I arrive at places, like, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking to make bonds and I can read people. Yeah. So I see who's for me. I see who's might be like sketchy, who's against me. Yeah, you know, I'm also a therapist and psychologist who studies all this stuff. And not that that makes me foolproof, but, you know, it's the world I live in, right? So.
Yeah. I think that our strategies around relationships and like safety in numbers and the richness of experience that comes when you're traveling with people they're probably a little bit different. One of the things that I loved about traveling with you in Lao and when we've traveled subsequently is that you do make these connections so naturally, and it really, really does add to the richness of the experience.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's lovely. I'll typically find my person or two. It would take me a little bit longer to build up to the point where I would want to do stuff with that person, because again, it requires a lot of energy for me. Takes a lot of energy out of me to travel, to interact over a period of time with somebody that I don't know well. But I'll do that enough to, you know, I'll do enough of that. But I will create, like, this is when I might join a pre-planned group to do a thing. Like in Nepal, it would have been to do the trek or to do the whitewater rafting.
Right.
In Southeast Asia, like we would do these little things that would be things where I'd join. So that would be a bit more of my strategy around relationships, you know, until I meet somebody like you, who it's just really easy to get to know. And those, you know, those people are out there too. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing those tips. And I just want to thank you, Nancy, just for even all of your generosity and graciousness with just sharing all of those personal experiences and your insights. I really think that listeners can get a lot out of that. And it was so, so like warm and wonderful to revisit like our relationship and reflect on that.
Yeah. I agree. Thanks again for having me. It is so fun to connect with, you know, this part of me that loves to be on the road and be reminded of what it brings to life.
That's good. And there's more travels ahead.
There are.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to my planning for Japan right after this.
Coming up, right? Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to also take this moment just to say to you, even publicly, just that you've had such an impact on my life. You've been there for me in countless ways that I can't even name if we had 3-4 hours on a podcast. And I just, it's just so, I'm so grateful for you and I love you.
Aw, thank you, Dan. I love you too. And feel the same way as, you know, my travel buddy, but also my like first friend in New York when I was making my home there. It's like, you helped a lot.
Would you come back on Journey again if we wanted to talk more? Great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
And have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of On Journey. This show is produced by myself and the talented Patrick McAndrew. Original music by the Groove Creator, Billy Mack. I'm your host, Danny G, and I will be with you in the next episode as we explore another adventure together here on Journey.